first and the second of common council, Jeffrey L. Campbell, appellee counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Paul Morrison. I'm a sole practitioner from Marion, Virginia. I'm here today representing Beverly Cole and the Friends of the Smithlands Regional Library, which is a 501c3 organization. We're here today to ask this court to reverse the ruling of the Smith County Circuit Court when it and find that the Smith County Board of Supervisors illegally entered into closed session, and while in that closed session, discussed dissolving our Smithland Regional Library, which had been in existence and serving our citizens for over 40 years. If I can only make one point of emphasis to the court today, I think it is very important for the court to understand that when our Board of Supervisors went into these closed sessions, the issue or the subject of the Smithland Regional Library did not appear on the agenda for any of the regularly scheduled meetings. In fact, the topic, Smithland Regional Library, was never even uttered during these four meetings. So that when our Board of Supervisors went behind closed doors and excluded the public, the citizens had no idea that they were discussing dissolving our regional library system. The Code of Virginia is very clear. 2.2-3711 sets forth 50 specific purposes for which a public body may enter into closed session. 2.2-3712 is also very specific. In order for a public body to enter into closed session, it must identify the subject matter, the purpose, and cite the applicable exemption under which it is going into closed session. In this particular case, the Smith County Board of Supervisors stated that they were going behind closed doors for 3711A7 to discuss legal matters of pending or probable litigation. They cited the applicable exemption as they were supposed to do. However, they didn't identify any subject matter whatsoever for their motion, and that is in direct violation of 3712. Your Honor, this case is distinguished from Marsh versus Richmond newspapers, as well as Danville versus Laird for the points that I set forth at the beginning. No comment at all about the Smithland Regional Library on the agenda. This is a case unlike any other that's been before this court. The trial court took up the issues of whether or not our Board of Supervisors went into closed session appropriately, and whether or not they discussed subject matter which was not identified in their motion. Unfortunately, the trial court just skipped over the requirements of 3712. By not identifying the subject matter, we never get to whether or not the discussions that they had in closed doors regarding pending litigation were outside the scope of the legal exemption.
May I ask you this? The pending litigation that was then pending, was there any pled contest in the pleadings of that case that implicated closing the library system?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. The Mowbray case, in the Mowbray case, which I'm sure the court's read the briefs, our Board of Supervisors decided to fire the seven trustees representing Smith County on the over the Smithland Regional Library. They fired them, and then they appointed themselves. So they were serving two roles, Board of Supervisor member as well as the trustee of the Smithland Regional Library. Pete Mowbray, one of those trustees, filed suits. The emphasis of his suit was, you've done this illegally, you haven't given us due process, and you cannot appoint yourselves to take over our positions.
So none of the pleadings indirectly or directly addressed a request to the court to close, suspend, or do anything to the system?
That is correct, Your Honor. None of the pleadings. So that when this happened, all of our citizenry was taken by surprise. The boards, during these four meetings, received all the information about the financial impact this would have on Smith County, about the benefits that would be lost or gained to our citizens by dissolving the regional library system. And that information should have been shared with the public. I understand that if the board had said they were going into closed session to discuss the Mowbray litigation, then they might have been able to have asked the question, what would dissolving our Smithland Regional Library, how would that affect the Mowbray litigation? They may have been able to ask that question, but they could not then conduct four meetings where they looked at all the financial impact and all of the privileges that would be lost under that legal exemption. It stretches the legal exemption way too far. And for those reasons, Your Honor, I believe that the motions are clearly in violation. I also believe that even if this court finds that the Mowbray litigation somehow triggered the legal exemption, that legal exemption did not stretch to cover what happened in these particular closed meetings. And if I don't have any questions from the court, I'll reserve an absorbent amount of time for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Jeffrey L. Campbell. I'm here representing the Smith County Board of Supervisors in this matter. We'll agree that this case appears to be a first impression, asking this court to construe what is required under 2.23712 of the Code of Virginia, the Freedom of Information Act, for a governing body to be able to legally enter closed session. This case ultimately is about an election that was taken on a couple of different nights by the Board of Supervisors to discuss the potential dissolution of the Smithland Regional Library. And for the court to understand why that was legally appropriate to do that, I think you need a little bit of a historical background about exactly what was going on with the regional library at that time. And Smith and Bland counties had formed this regional cooperation some many years ago, and they were having difficulty, obviously, with raising enough finances to be able to maintain their operations. They were entertaining budget cuts at that time, and the regional library fell within the target zone of those budget cuts. It was during the course of those budget deliberations that a whistleblower, the chief financial officer of the regional library, came forward in an unsolicited fashion with substantial evidence of misappropriations of funds, wage theft, and a gross mismanagement by the regional library and its board of directors. A criminal investigation ensued by the Virginia State Police, and it was during the course of this that the Board of Supervisors became particularly concerned about the dissipation of evidence. And they elected at that point in time to remove the then Board of Directors because of concerns about their lack of oversight during that process. Not surprisingly, a lawsuit was initiated by Pete Mowbray and others seeking injunctive relief in the Circuit Court of Smith County in the form of reinstatement of their positions as library board members. Approximately 3 weeks later, after the fact, after the litigation had been ongoing for some time, the Board of Supervisors wished to consult with their legal counsel in closed session with respect to the potential dissolution of the regional library itself and what impact that might have on the pending litigation with respect to whether it might render it moot or not. Those discussions were had very clearly. The record reflects that. It's clearly stated in the statement of facts that was agreed upon by counsel. And a vote was taken in open session to dissolve the library after conducting a special meeting upon proper notice to the public.
Would you agree, counsel, that dissolution of the library would negate the necessity for a board at all, and so that might moot the board's argument? But when you discuss the financial benefits of closing the library, would you agree that that goes beyond the requirement for the exemption?
Respectfully, Justice Powell, no, I would not. And the reason is because the litigation itself was contemplative of significant financial cost to the county. And the act of dissolving the library cuts short that litigation and saves significant financial costs as well. And that was actually the scope of the discussion with respect to the finances and the financial implications of closing the library anyway. It took place in closed session.
It's one of the peculiarities of representing a governmental entity is you have some options that ordinary litigants don't have, and one of those, if the legislative body agrees, is you can wipe out the law or the whatever and thereby moot the lawsuit. And so that is just something that's different that when you have a government litigant versus a private litigant.
I would agree, Justice McCullough, I would agree. I will say that I think that there's four reasons why that the court should affirm the rulings of the trial court in this matter. First of all, you need to look at the plain language of 2.23712. It doesn't contain a specificity requirement, despite what the appellants contend here. It merely states that you have to cite a subject matter. That's the first prong in the statute. Now, the appellant urges that, in this case, that there should be more specificity in that recitation. Had the General Assembly intended for you not to be able to track the statutory language of the exemptions themselves to put the public on notice as to what you were discussing, they simply could have prohibited such.
But strictly construed, the exemption for litigation could be read broadly to have the tail wag the dog and go to matters that are purely collateral to litigation but have an effect on it, like mootness. The example that Justice McCullough just gave you, in any zoning case, you'd have this sort of thing come up. You go in, you have this zoning action brought against you, you go into executive session, talk about the case, what are we going to do, what's our defense? Well, why don't we just change the zoning and moot this whole problem? The mootness point is always going to be a potential tag-along to litigation discussion. You know this as a litigator. So if we're truly doing a strict construction, shouldn't we distinguish between matters that are integral to the legal counsel being given or collateral? Don't we have to do something to find the range of materiality?
I think the contemplation of the broad range of legal matters that could be discussed make it nearly impossible for this court to construct such a standard. And I'd urge the court also to consider the fact that when the Marsh case was decided, you had a different statute in place. The predecessor statute to 2.23712 was 2.1344.1. It, in fact, contained a specificity requirement. And I'm going to read to you exactly what that was. Before you could go into closed session, you had to make a motion specifically stating the purpose or purposes, which would be the subject of the meeting, and reasonably identifying the substance of the matters to be discussed. Now, let me repeat those words because they're important. Reasonably identifying the substance of the matters to be discussed. Now, those words are critical because in the 1999 amendments, when the General Assembly readopted this, they took those words out.
But there's specificity, and you can specify it all you want to, but you can't go back and talk in private about things that should be talked in public. So, I mean, the specificity point doesn't address at all the heart of the case, which is their argument is the subject matter of closing the whole library system is definitely the issue on the table, not resolving one piece of litigation.
I don't think the evidence showed that there was discussions that went beyond just simply the financial considerations with respect to what the state cost savings would be to the county by the short-circuiting of that litigation.
Is it short-circuiting litigation and not having to pay the legal fees to defend yourself, or is it the actual operating costs of the library system, which is going to be there with or without the litigation?
Are you asking what took place in closed session? Is that
if the argument is, well, we just talked about economics, and it's close, it is, in fact, Justice Kelsey, integral to litigation because we're talking about the cost of the defending litigation. I get that. But that doesn't quite sound like what I read in the papers, which is, no, the underlying question was the capacity to continue the system economically, which would be irrespective of the Mowbray case.
Right, but that evidence was not presented to the court at all. If you look at the agreed statement of facts, it's very clear that the only discussion with respect to the cost implications was the impact on the litigation. That's actually stated, I think, in number five, maybe, on the agreed statement of facts. I would agree with you that there's certainly cases in which you could go into closed session under that theory and go far beyond the subject matter that you had entered closed session for, without question. And there are safeguards in FOIA to ensure against that, and one of those is the certification by the members when they exit closed session. That nothing beyond that was discussed. You know, I'd also urge the court to consider that. Think of what the impact of importing such a subjective, malleable standard into the subject matter as is urged by the appellant in this case. I mean, it would be a forever moving target. A governing body can never be ensured that they had safely recited enough facts in the subject matter to ensure against a flood of litigation. The result of that is there's going to be a litany of subsequent legal challenges on the grounds that, well, the park that you recited that you were going to build in the West End, exactly where in the West End? What kind of park?
But, counsel, isn't the opposite of that, that the governing body can just cite the exemption and then go into closed session and discuss a broad array of things that are only tangentially related to the exemption, and the citizens would never know what was discussed or the reasoning behind the decision? So there are, your argument is well taken, but the opposite of that could be equally true.
I would agree, Justice Powell. There is a delicate balancing act that goes on here, obviously. And I think this court has previously held that the narrow construction of the exemptions must give way to the public benefit and the public interest in ensuring the negotiating or litigating posture of the governing body to ensure the confidentiality of those discussions and how that might negatively impact the governing body. I urge you to consider the fact that when a governing body goes into a closed session to discuss ongoing litigation and they have an outstanding offer of settlement on the table, the very length of time that they are in closed session, the number of times they enter closed session, the body language of the members when they exit closed session, the facial expressions, would say worlds, would give a veritable window by an opposing counsel sitting in the audience into those members' seriousness in consideration of those offers. And urging a standard by which you would have to recite the specific litigation itself as the subject matter would create that very scenario and would cut against what the purposes of FOIA are as well. Certainly, informing the public is one purpose. The other purpose, as stated in 2.23700, is to promote and protect the public benefit. Now, certainly, if you're compromising the public's purse because of the recitation of subject matter in an open session, it might compromise that governing body's ability to negotiate, then you're not promoting the public benefit.
But in this particular instance, how would these discussions have compromised the ability to negotiate?
Because there were ongoing offers of settlement at that time.
But you all have the right to dissolve whether or not the people on the other side of the litigation want you to dissolve the library or not.
Correct.
So how does it affect your negotiating with them if they know you're thinking about dissolving the library?
There's a difference between having the power and ability to do it and the willingness.
But a discussion about dissolution would seem to strengthen your position in settlement. We're just going to dissolve this thing. So what are we now litigating? It would become moot that they want to be reinstated. What am I missing?
What are we now? I respectfully ask you to restate the question.
You're saying that it could impact your settlement abilities if they knew that you were considering dissolution.
Right.
It would seem that a decision to dissolve would moot their entire case, which would only strengthen your settlement position.
Correct.
So why not trumpet it at a public meeting?
Yeah.
because of the fact that we, again, you're talking about seven elected members, elected officials of the Board of Supervisors, not all of which agreed with that action. And no one, again, no one could be, until you know the pulse of the governing body, how can you be assured that you could trumpet that?
Can you briefly help me out with paragraph 15 of the Statement of Facts, Supervisor Frazier's testimony that his decision to vote to disband, was purely economic, had nothing to do with litigation. How does that fit into the argument for you from your perspective?
I think it's an individual's personal statement as to the reasons why he made the vote he made. It doesn't go to the majority of the Board of Supervisors as to the gravamen of why he took that action. I think he was, quite frankly, was an outlier in the group.
Can I go to the specific language of the exemption in 2.23711A7? It allows the public body to go into closed session concerning consultation with legal counsel pertaining to actual or probable litigation where such consultation or briefing in open meeting would adversely affect the negotiating or litigating posture of the public body. And the hang-up I have is how the discussions in private session concerning the dissolution of the library would have adversely affected negotiating or litigating posture of the Board of Supervisors. Having those discussions in public, how would it have adversely affected negotiating or litigating posture?
Because it allows the opposition to gauge how many members might be for dissolution and how many might be against.
And so how does that hurt you? How does that hurt you in the litigation?
But just as Justice Powell said earlier, you would be trumpeting, basically, or could be trumpeting that you don't have the wherewithal to be able to vote for dissolution, ultimately, if you choose to do so. So how it would impact, ultimately, is if they know that's the case, then their offer to settle may not be...
How are they going to know that, though? Because if you talk about this in an open discussion, the Board of Supervisors is not taking a vote. You're just having people talk about it, right? And getting the information, making public the information about there are other reasons why we might want to dissolve this other than the fact of this litigation, which it seems like one of the members of the Board of Supervisors said was very important to him.
And your question would be?
My question would be, why did this need to be in public? How did these discussions in any way satisfy the exemption concerning being in closed session?
Because again, I think having an open and frank discussion by seven members, again, that had not been whose pulse had not yet been taken as to whether or not dissolution was an appropriate move for the board, could very well have compromised the ability to utilize that as a bargaining tool in terms of resolving the ongoing litigation. Because again, if someone sitting in the audience premised upon comments made in an open session by seven members of the Board of Supervisors would believe that they would never vote to dissolve anyway, then ultimately that would compromise your ability to settle.
So your point is, if you do it in private, people may think you have the votes. You do it in public, it might be obvious, actually, you don't.
Correct.
Would you agree that you did not identify a subject matter?
No, I would not agree.
You won't agree to that. Would you agree that your language tracks the exemption?
I would. And if you will look at the numerous exemptions under 2.23711, they contemplate various purposes mm-hmm. and various subject matters. For instance, under A1, you might be considering promotion of an individual, you might be considering termination, you might be considering discipline. There's a various amount of subject matter.
There are three things that you have to have. You have to state the subject matter, you have to cite the applicable exemption, and you have to state the purpose of the meeting. It seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that all you all did was cite the applicable exemption. little 3I of A, when it says you have to do two other things.
No, and I think...
You may have stated the purpose.
Right. We recited 2.23711A7, which is the code section. It's an enumerated exemption.
Mm-hmm. That's little 3I.
Right. We recited consultation with legal counsel and staff, which would be the purpose of the meeting.
And the subject matter is what?
Actual or probable litigation.
I'm sorry?
Actual or probable litigation.
That's the subject matter?
It would be. And asking, and for the court to import something beyond that requirement would, again, set a malleable standard that would be very difficult for governing bodies to ultimately
complete. I hate to keep hammering this, but 7 includes actual or probable litigation. Consultation with legal counsel and briefings by staff members or consultants pertaining to actual or probable litigation, where such consultation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I don't see really a purpose, and I definitely don't see a subject matter, so I'm having trouble finding the subject matter apart from the exemption.
I think the exemption itself recites both purposes and subject matter. Because you could, one of the purposes would be a briefing with a consultant, which could presumably be an expert witness under that code section. But in our specific case, it was a consultation with legal counsel and staff members. Again, that would be the purpose regarding actual and probable litigation, which would be the subject matter.
Can you answer your question? I've got one final question for you. At one point, you started off telling us 4 reasons to affirm, and I think we cut you off. So I just wanted, yeah. I just wanted to get those.
You may well. Ultimately, and I think in the brief, appellant's counsel recited a FOIA counsel opinion that has sort of weighed in on this. And I think it's important to understand what the purpose and the duties of the FOIA Council is exactly. And that was created by the General Assembly with the idea that the FOIA...
Can I stop you just for a second? Because I was just asking for the 4 reasons to affirm. And you were going through them like 1, 2, 3. One was the plain language of the statute, 3712.
The other is the legislative history of FOIA, which specifically exempted the reasonable identification of the substance matters be discussed language, and never has sought to place that back in to the statute again. And the third is the overall public policy of FOIA and protecting the public benefit and the public coffers by preventing the compromise to the negotiation or litigating posture of the governing body. And lastly, I would argue that the court shouldn't put any reliance on the FOIA opinion in any way, shape, or form, because the FOIA Council was created for the purpose of providing a prophylactic cover for elected officials from the penalties that FOIA imposes by simply being able to rely upon those opinions as an affirmative defense. And so, not surprisingly, they're called upon quite often to rule about ambiguous parts of a statute such as this, and very often without the benefit of the foundation of a high court ruling. And so they construe those opinions very broadly, as broadly as conceivable, in favor of compliance, so as to ensure that they don't end up the subject matter of a Supreme Court case. So that would be the 4th reason.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll be brief, Your Honors, although I know the counsel following me probably hopes that I drag this out as long as possible so that he can get here. But
we're going to wait for him.
But first and foremost, I'd like to talk about the statement of facts. Counsel's mentioned a whistleblower and a criminal investigation, and that's nowhere in this agreed statement of facts. It doesn't appear. Secondly, Paragraph 8 of the agreed statement of facts states all information relied upon by the Board of Supervisors regarding the costs and or benefits of disbanding the regional library system was presented orally by County Administrator Michael Carter during these closed sessions. So the benefits, what we were going to lose as a county, what we were going to gain, all of that in the agreed statement of facts was done behind closed doors. Thirdly, just as the circuit court speaks through its orders, the Board of Supervisors speaks through its votes and its resolutions. And the resolution in this case was, we dissolved the Smith Bland Regional Library purely for financial reasons. There is no mention about litigation. It was purely a financial decision. The Board of Supervisors is asking the court to ignore the plain language of 3712. They want you to take 3711, which is clearly entitled closed meetings authorized for certain limited purposes. They want you to take the A7 purpose and consider it both the purpose and the subject matter. And to do so ignores the plain language of 3712 requiring some type of subject matter be identified.
Let me ask you this then, going back to the resolution point, how would the logic of your argument change, if at all, if the resolution had said, we're closing the library, and the reason why is because we have outstanding litigation, we're pouring money out of the coffers for no good reason, we can't justify this anymore, so we're closing it down. If the resolution said something like that, what would change in your legal logic, not your litigation strategy, but what you're asking us to say about this statute?
First and foremost, Your Honor, the motion itself would have to refer to the Mowbray litigation.
Yeah, assume all that.
We're assuming that. Once they got behind closed doors, I do not think that legal exemption can be stretched to cover the discussion of dissolving the Smith Bland Regional Library.
But what if the resolution came out and they said, we are going to close it. We talked about it back in closed chambers. The reason we're closing down the library is because of this litigation. It's the only economically legitimate thing for us to do. We can't print money, so thanks a lot for suing us because we're going to have close it down. We don't have a good choice, any choice but that. If they had actually said that and voted upon that, would that change the scope of the closed-door meeting and the proper topics being discussed?
If they had actually said that, yes, that would have expanded the scope beyond the Mowbray litigation. It would have expanded the scope to the cost and benefits available to the public in that discussion that took place behind closed doors, if that's what they had added to their resolution. However, I don't think the discussion is exempt under, we're supposed to narrowly apply those exemptions, and I just don't think you can get there stretching it that far.
Opposing counsel made the point that the concern for a local body and their legal advisors of a malleable standard. So give us examples in this type of situation of what it should have said in your view. I mean, would it be sufficient to reference, you know, the litigants and the record number, for instance, or does it need to say more?
I assume, Justice, that you're referring to the subject matter that
right.
would be required. Your Honor, I believe if they said that we're going behind closed doors to discuss pending or probable litigation surrounding the Smith Bland Regional Library, something to indicate what they were discussing. At that point, I think they could have asked what dissolving the regional library would have done to the Mowbray litigation, but I still do not believe they could go into all the costs and benefit analysis of making that decision to actually dissolve it themselves.
Right, but you agree they could talk about litigation costs?
Absolutely.
Right.
Yes, Your Honor, I do.
So if it said, let's say, Smith versus Board of Supervisors, record number, et cetera, in this circuit court, and that would be enough?
I believe so, yes, Your Honor. I think they could.
Right.
I lost my train of thought there. So, finally, Your Honor, I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this case. It's been 726 days, so thank you for taking the time to hear us. We're asking that you reverse the Smith County Court and find that these meetings violated the Fourth. Thank you very much.
Thank you. court will remain in recess until 12:30 p.m.
All rise.